So thank you very much. It's a huge pleasure to be invited to come here and address you here this morning. And really what I wanted to talk about is the work that a lot of you have already been involved in terms of the work Philip is doing to look ahead to the future of the whole library and information profession. We are absolutely at the moment going through our own process of transformation. So one of the things I really wanted to do is congratulate you warmly on reaching this stage in your own transformation towards Libraries Connected. It really is a huge achievement. SILIP, as many of you know, works across more than 20 industry sectors. So we have members in public libraries, in schools, in the corporate sector, in lots and lots of different and interesting contexts. And that means we need strong partners in each of those 20 sectors to make sure that we can really have an impact and achieve the changes that we want to. I think through the magic of, thank you so much for that, that's brilliant. The slides will now magically appear, which I will move through as quickly as possible. It's not. I'll just use buttons. Yes, so as I say, SILIP itself is going through its own process of transformation, and some of the things that we're looking at in terms of the future of the workforce aren't so much about the workforce itself, they're more about the people that we are here to serve. So how is society changing? How's the population changing? One of the things we know is it's going to get crowded, that the UK population is scheduled to grow by more than 10% since 2012 towards 2030. So that is built of people living longer, learning longer, being active for longer in their lives. It's also built from a significantly increased birth rate. We also know that 83% of the UK population is going to be based in urban centres over the next 20 years. So there's huge demographic change going on around the audiences we're here to serve. We know that consumers are changing, patterns of user behaviour are changing. Some of that's driven by technology, some of it by the democratisation of access to knowledge, some of it just about people, how people are spending leisure time, family time, how they're choosing to allocate their working and waking hours. We know about some of the big trends that are impacting on the people who are going to be using our libraries over the next 20 years. So we know about things like meaningful consumption, consumer-based experiences that have depth and purpose and connect to a sense of value. We know about things like social prescribing, trying to alleviate some of the pressure on health and social care budgets by enabling people to manage their conditions in the long term, enabling communities to work together to support one another. We know that people are looking for meaningful community spaces, spaces to be and to participate in civic life, that they're looking for places to come together that have depth and meaning but aren't necessarily the kind of retail environment that they're used to on the high street. And we know that both online and in the real world, there is an increased emphasis towards keeping it local. So the idea that social media will trend towards my personalized social network that I curate rather than being part of somebody else's mass social platform. That people are looking at things like local consumption, understanding where the resources that they consume come from. We know that the world of education is changing fundamentally. So demographic change, technological disruption is changing the way people learn. Less and less likely that you go to college separately from being at work, but that you are living a life that kind of moves between educational and learning context and your daily life. We know too that the world of work is changing for the people who are going to be using our libraries. So where they work, when they work, how they work, all of those things are changing. And every single industry has to ask itself these questions. What will be the impact of AI and automation on my sector over the next 20 to 30 years? How do I harness the power of data-driven insight meaningfully to the work that libraries are doing? And how do we make sure that we don't create new forms of digital exclusion, information poverty, and digital disempowerment by the ways in which we're deploying some of these technologies? We also know that places are changing. We know we've got an increasingly urbanized population. We know that technology, data analytics, smart cities are driving different relationships with the places where people live and work, all of which is changing the broader context within which we work as a profession. And so our view at SILIP certainly is society is changing, consumers, education, work, places, all are changing, and so should we. We should absolutely evolve and adapt to the changing context of those communities as a profession. So I think the first step towards that really was the work we did jointly with yourselves at SEL, and huge thanks to all of you that were involved in this on the public library skills strategy. The idea of attracting, retaining and developing talent from the widest possible pool of people, targeting inclusion, representation and equality, investing in professional skills and ethics, and I'll say a word about professionalism in just a moment, an open and inclusive approach to being a professional, lowering barriers, making a commitment to CPD. These are the pillars on which I think we are going to build the public library workforce of the future. And I'm going to talk less about the skill set that those people are going to need and more about how we go about developing that workforce. We are a profession united. We are, all of us, information professionals. So this is the map of people. There's around 13,000 odd people in SILIP membership today, working as librarians in different contexts, working as knowledge and information managers, working as data professionals. But the key thing about this map is that people are spending less and less of their career in just one part of it, that what we're seeing is the sharing of skills. We're seeing school librarians learning about data and analytics. We're looking at how librarians in the public library sector are looking at information governance in their local authority context. So we are, as a profession, developing a very broad portfolio of transferable skills. We are a workforce in the UK of around 87,000 people. The majority of those, around 52,000, work in a library context. We also know that the distribution of that workforce is not even. The largest employer for librarianship in the sector is HE, but the second largest is still the public library domain. Now, that picture is changing, but actually you are an incredibly important part of librarianship and that library workforce. So some of the issues that are defining how we're going to approach workforce development over the next 10 or 15 years touch on these around being an open and an inclusive profession. We know that 97% of our workforce self-identify as white. We know that we have an issue in some parts of the sector, particularly around gender pay inequality. We know that the figure that nobody likes me using, but I'm going to use it anyway, 45% of the current workforce reach retirement age in the next 10 to 15 years. Now that's true in the UK, it's true in Australia, it's true in every library community around the world. There is a transfusion about to happen. Most librarians hold a degree level qualification, and more people now are coming into the sector as a second career, aged 25 to 35, than come in through a formal LIS qualification through a library school. In terms of diversity, our ambition is that as a profession we should aspire to exemplify diversity and inclusion as a core strength. We ought to reflect the communities that we serve. We've set out our diversity and equality action plan. We are currently developing, if there are any funders in the room, proposals around a large-scale programme over the next 3 years, which we would love to partner with SCL on around diversifying this workforce. At our conference in July, we're going to be announcing, in partnership with a group of non-white librarians and information professionals, the SILIP BAME Librarians and Information Professionals Network. We are also just in the process of launching a stand against sexual harassment in the information profession. We undertook a piece of survey research work which found a terrifyingly high incidence. Frankly, any incidence is unacceptable, but terrifyingly high incidence of people in our profession who have experienced some form of sexual harassment. And we've now written to employers across the sector asking them to stand with us around that policy and undertaking further work. And again, that's something we really hope to be able to work with yourselves and SCL on. We are also, in terms of diversifying this workforce, in the process of a thing a lot of you have been involved in, of bringing forward librarian apprenticeships. We think apprenticeship is incredibly important as a way of diversifying this community, and so we would love to continue that work. One of the principles, and I think we'll talk much more about this in a minute, is about leadership at every level, not just an excuse to share this magnificent photo of Majid Majid, the new Lord Mayor of Sheffield, but we really see leadership development, developing those core competences in leadership, as the most important step we could take in securing the future of our profession. We have to have leaders who can take on the mantle that you've all brilliantly put forward, that can take that forward into the future. So over 600 people have joined our leaders network since January, and the leadership program that we launched initially with a brilliant initial dialogue with CLAW, which we'd love to follow up on, was hugely oversubscribed. And so there's a dot, 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 because we think there is a need for there to be a leadership academy for this sector. And again, we would love to talk to you. In terms of talent, we have to put down ladders to welcome the next generation of librarians and leaders from all backgrounds. We really have to make it possible for a young person coming into librarianship today to see themselves as a leader, to look to you and to look to you for support and mentoring in helping them through that journey. We have to make sure more young people are aware of the options and the opportunities of a career in libraries. There have to be jobs for people to go into, so we have to engage more with employers and continue to work with you to lobby for proper investment in our public library sector. And we need ultimately also to be working with employers. Finally, before, but penultimate slide, we are embarking on the process of redefining professionalism for a new age, which is why it says let the adventure begin, because it's already proving to be a challenging dialogue to have in our profession about what it means to be a professional. Our aim is to set out an open and inclusive, a progressive view that you are what makes you a professional, and then that training, development, CPD, qualifications and recognition can support you in recognising and developing that professionalism. But our view is that a professional is someone who champions the profession, leads and instigates change, behaves ethically, aspires to excellence, is a reflective practitioner and maintains their skills. And so we need to have a conversation in our sector about how we bring forward a new idea of what we mean when we say the word professional. So finally, the trends that we've seen. We're doing a series of Future of the Profession workshops across the UK over the next couple of months. We are becoming an embedded professional workforce, so we are increasingly embedded into large-scale organisations providing advice. We hear from employers that it's all about hiring for attitude, training for skills. So you need people who are pro-change, on their toes, making things happen, and then you need to build them out as librarians. Transferable skills matter. People need to be able to continue to move. We think automation needs to become something we harness and own rather than get rolled over by, and so we need to take control of our relationship with AI and automation. But this idea of embracing perpetual change is very much part of the skill set of this future workforce. And so I'd finish just with this line. Society, consumers, education, work, and places are all changing, and so are we as a profession. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about as we move forward in this conversation with, brilliantly, your new Libraries Connected. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Nick knows that retirement slide is usually one he has a dig at me at. I'm conscious because I'm having an age crisis just now that the term is past it, President. So anyway, this morning I want to focus though on the public library skills strategy, but I also want to reflect a little bit of what I think is needed on the ground, and this is from a personal perspective. I really welcome the development of the public library skills strategy. I think it was long overdue, and great to have that partnership with SEL and CILIP. Enabled the sector for the first time in a long time to set out that strategic framework for workforce development, and it's something that I've used back at the ranch with our own organisational development people to reinforce the need for some sector-specific development as opposed to just some of the more generic corporate activity that's been taking place. It really allowed us to review and refresh our understanding of what the sector and our citizens need for the future delivery of public library services. And I think Nick's point about future-proofing and looking at actually what our population is going to be in 10, 15, 20 years is really important. The strategy covers 2017 to 2030, which is quite an ambitious time frame, but I'm sure it will evolve depending on the need and relevance. Nick's touched on it, but the key aims of the strategy were to attract, retain and develop talent. There is a real need for the sector to attract the best new talent from diverse backgrounds and to work within libraries and information skills sector. There's a real need to target inclusion, diversity, representation and quality. For me, does my library workforce reflect our customer base? At the moment, not necessarily. How can we change that? There's a need to ensure that the public library workforce, I say, represents the full range of communities we serve and work with. There is a need to invest in professional skills and ethics. A need to promote leadership at every single level of the organisation, encouraging and supporting staff to help co-design and contribute to the development and the evolvement of the service, and an open and inclusive approach to professionalism, and I welcome Nick's comments. Need to lower the barriers to entry, create multiple pathways and routes for progression, and that commitment to continuing professional development the value in transferable skills, and definitely to look beyond the sector. There has been much progress in this work, and I'd go on record to thank Alison Wheeler for her sterling work as we were establishing the strategy, and latterly to Carol Stump from Kirk Lees, Julie Griffiths from Halton, and Catherine Harrison from Wakefield in taking this important work forward for SCL. Thanks also to the Arts Council England for funding the first strands of the work. Like many strategies, this one was developed as part of the Task Force Action Plan, but without any funding. An extremely successful leadership course has been held, which consisted of a two-day residential in Oxford and a one-day follow-up in Manchester, which I'm sure my colleagues are going to touch on. But it had a really good wide geographical spread. Representatives from Barbican, Wakefield, Halton, Newcastle, Dorset, Nottingham, Kent, Lincolnshire, Oldham, Richmond and Wandsworth, Suffolk, GLL, Milton Keynes, Lambeth and Libraries Unlimited. So a really good reach across the country. The project board also agreed to plan a digital skills portfolio for public library staff, which builds on the SCL digital offer. Content for learning modules is currently being developed as we speak. The working group have also been looking at a UK-wide job shadowing scheme, which the project board feel should be widened to include mentoring, building on the successful Living Knowledge Network mentoring scheme and the North West mentoring scheme, which aims to support the public library skills strategy with a particular focus on leadership at every level. So I'm really delighted that there has been some really good progress, and there's a need to look at the next stages and also that elephant in the room, the funding. There is an ambition to roll out the leadership programme. Costs are currently being developed, and with the evaluation, and you're going to hear later on some extremely positive feedback. But I'm confident that this is something that could be packaged and sold to library authorities, but we must be able to articulate the relevance and the need for this. I feel within the sector, though, there is a recognition that over the past 8 years there has not been significant development of our workforce, and there is now, I think, the ship is turning, and there's a willingness within local authorities to reinvest. The word relevance, though, brings me to my thinking of what is needed on the ground now and some of the practical and creative solutions that we need to be developed. These views are my own. They don't reflect Libraries Connected, they don't reflect, you know, the wider sector. I'm keen in my organisation to focus on three key areas: frontline, future leaders and specialist roles. Janine alluded to in her opening remarks, as part of my transformation of Central Library, the building part I often say was the easy bit. Actually, the transformation for the workforce and the transformation for the customer was the bit that really needed a lot of time and a lot of effort. And I think it's vital that we as library leaders build in that time to take our workforce and our customers on our ever-growing transformation journey. For me, frontline library staff, our library assistants, I quite often refer to my library assistants as the directors of first impression. They are the face of the service. They are the first people that our residents, our citizens and our visitors actually meet, and they are critical to the success of the organisation, and we have a huge expectation on them. How do we ensure that they have the skills to deliver the huge triage of services that we expect, and how do we build on the knowledge that they need to have that inch deep but mile wide knowledge to actually service our residents? The challenge that I face is how do we skill what can be a predominantly part-time workforce who are actually timetabled to ensure that we're able to open the doors? How do we build in that time to actually ensure that they have the skills to meet that expectation that we as the library service have, but also that our political masters have within the local authority? So we need to ensure that any modules that we build are relevant, but also need to ensure that the library staff have a clear understanding of why they require this level of knowledge and skills. And there's also a need, I think, for us to be ahead of the curve and be ready for the next big thing. We too often end up playing catch-up. A great example of where we managed to progress the future need was around Code Green as part of the universal offer in learning. And we were able to, you know, pull staff together to build confidence in library staff, allowing them to learn together, to understand the relevance of the library and their role in this element of the learning offer. The relevance and the why question are always critical in my comms with the team. This is where the universal offers have actually enabled me to be really useful in showcasing that this work is part of something bigger and not, as quite often some of my team say, a Neil thing. The specialist role, what are the specialist roles? What do we actually need? Why do we need them? And actually, could we start to share them? Sometimes I feel over the past 8 years of budget pressures, we have lost a huge set of skills and knowledge through staffing reductions. So there's no doubt about that. But I think we need to be clear what we need for the future and be able to articulate that. Too often I hear we used to have. What I want to know is, well, what do we need now? And how do we design, how do we co-design posts for the future? Could we share posts and roles and expertise? Certainly in Greater Manchester, within the archives, we established a skills pool across the 10 authorities, taking a strength-based approach to the workforce, identifying what individual skills members of the team have, so they can then look at how we make best use of them across the authorities. Pulling in that skill and expertise where and when it's actually needed, rather than having that post there all the time. Identifying individuals with bespoke pieces of work as and when required. And it's something that we're starting to look at within Greater Manchester Libraries with a work programme of various work streams and looking at actually what could we do better together and how do we share maybe some of those specialist roles. We've recognised that there is a specialism, I say, so how do we potentially refocus back to the basics? Future leaders, I'll go back to my paranoia of the ageing workforce, but the majority of my staff are 50 plus. And the majority of middle and senior managers within Manchester will all retire within 5 years of each other. I'm one of the younger ones, I have to say, but I'm still having a crisis. But I'm sure that is something that many of you in the room also face. So that the future leaders element of the skills strategy is absolutely critical, as is the mentoring. And there's need with less and less movement between authorities for our future leaders to network, to learn, to share, and just think away from their own workplace and service. The ambition of future leaders, for me though, should not be limited purely to being future library leaders. And we should work with other organisations, key organisations, to look at how we feed library leaders into the wider leadership programmes within local government, the cultural sector, and promote within our own networks. The other thing that I'm really keen on is how we actually ensure that our future leaders get a chance to actually see what's happening internationally and learn from best practice. So I've now started to get some of our future leaders to engage in some international programmes and international visits. I'll touch on volunteers very quickly. We've been really successful in Manchester in actually recruiting volunteers to become our next library assistants, and that has worked tremendously well. It's almost like having an apprentice without paying it. They've had an opportunity to see what the job actually entails. We've had an opportunity to actually work with them, and you've always got that perfect match. So they actually, you know, how often have we recruited people who have come into the library service thinking it's X, and then having a panic attack when they realise that it's actually Y. I'm confident that by working together we can crack on and take the public library skills strategy from vision to venture. We've got an event coming up on the 28th of June at Leeds Central Library, an update workshop exploring job creation and innovation, and we'll recirculate that information next week. Finally, I'll reflect on some of the stuff that I heard last night, and I think there's definitely room in the for a singing module in the strategy. Thank you.
I'm old as well. Glasses. There we go. Good morning. Thank you all very much for your time today and for inviting me to participate. I'm Fiona and I'm the Learning and Courses Manager at the CLOR Leadership Programme. And I have to say, I was quite daunted when I was asked to participate today. Because whilst I've worked in the cultural sector for nearly 30 years, and when I did the maths on that, that really kind of made me feel very old indeed, I wouldn't consider myself in any way, shape or form to be an expert in libraries, or indeed the particular challenges that you working in the sector face. I'm a user of libraries, as a young mum, mum of a young child, not such a young mum. The rhyme time and baby bounce sessions were a lifeline for me in terms of getting out of the house. So I fully appreciate the important work that libraries play in our communities. Thankfully, my panel members here today are far more skilled in what the needs of the sector are, which leaves me to talk with confidence about what I do know, which is what the work that we do at the CLORA Leadership Programme is, and how that work could possibly help to build the future workforce of libraries. So today I'm going to talk to you about three things. Firstly, the importance of great cultural leadership, and I include librarians and people who work in the library sector as cultural leaders, and why we need to develop that. What the CLORA Leadership's approach is to developing those leaders, and where this all fits in with the future workforce of libraries. So, what is leadership? Why is it important? And why do we need to develop cultural leaders? To me, leadership isn't something that's static within an organisation or society. It's very dynamic and it's very fluid, and it can be seen anywhere within society, not just at the top of an organisation. As my fellow panellists have said, leaders can be found working in many, many different levels within an organisation. In the cultural sector, they work in communications, business development, information services, cultural learning, programming. They work as artists, they work as choreographers, they work as musicians, they work as volunteers. They are the directors of first impressions that you mentioned. You can lead from the top, from the centre, from the bottom of an organisation. And equally, you don't have to work in an organisation to be a leader. I see leadership as not about this struggle to get to the top, to rise to the top of the hierarchy. It's not about that. Leadership for me and for us at CLORA is about wanting to make a difference, to make meaningful change, and to take on the responsibility that goes with that. At CLORA, one of the defining features of a leader is that element of wanting to make meaningful change. So for leader, read change maker. So over the last 12 years that I've been working at CLORA, I've had the pleasure and the privilege of meeting, I guess it must be well over 1,500 participants from our courses and from our fellowship programmes. And it's great to see the involvement of so many of them here this week, and sitting out there in the audience today. Kira Eastall, Ayub Khan, Tabitha Witherick, Sudnam Harif Khan, Peter Gore, Chris Moore. There's probably many more out there, but those are the ones that I've picked up the names from the delegate list. What I find with all of the cultural leaders that I have the pleasure to work with is the resilience, the passion, and the commitment that they demonstrate, and that never ceases to thrill me. These are cultural leaders. Cultural leaders inspire, they connect, and they navigate. As inspirers, they are passionate about what they do, and they have ideas that resonate with others. As connectors, they know themselves well, are true to themselves, and tirelessly build and nurture relationships. And as navigators, they have a clear sense of purpose and direction. They plan strategic, and they show others the way. We need these inspirational change makers in the current climate. We are experiencing rapid social, economic, political, and environmental change, and we need people who are prepared to make positive change and make that change happen at a time of great uncertainty. The world is changing fast, and within that world, culture too is changing at a great rate of knots. The library sector in particular has experienced and continues to experience this fast rate of change. So, in these challenging times, we need cultural leaders who are courageous. We need leaders who are open to change, politically astute, resourceful, resilient, determined. Leaders who are willing to fail, willing to try again. We need leaders who are adventurous, optimistic, self-aware. Leaders who understand their own strengths, but equally other strengths, and the willingness to share their experience and develop others within their teams. Oh yes, and of course, they must have the so-called hard skills: strategic planning, financial management, fundraising, advocacy, digital literacy, presentation skills, media training, marketing know-how. It's a huge job. The scale of the job is immense, and above all, it needs practice more practice, and yet more practice. And this is why we need to develop our leaders. A good leader, as I'm sure you'll agree, never stops learning. The process is ongoing. A good leader never stops listening and is always curious across and beyond culture. This is where I think the CLAW Leadership Programme can step in. So, what is our approach to leadership development? What do we offer? Through our core programmes, we aim to reach out to individuals across the cultural sector. So on all of our programmes, you will see people from galleries, museums, theatres, orchestras, libraries, of course. We meet their leadership development needs, or attempt to, at whatever stage they might be in their career. So currently, our core programmes exist of a week-long residential course for emerging leaders. It provides a toolkit of skills for those in the early stages of their career. We provide a two-week-long leadership intensive course, which used to be called the short course. 2 weeks, it wasn't short, we changed the name. This enables those at a later stage in their career to step back and have the opportunity to think more strategically about their work so that they can influence and affect change more effectively. And we run the CLAW Fellowship, which is now a 9-month programme for those more senior leaders who wish to impact beyond their immediate sphere of influence. In the near future, we plan to offer even more modular courses blended with more digital learning, seminars, workshops, taster sessions, breakfast seminars. The list will go on. Irrespective of which programme of ours you attend, across all of our work, we provide the space and the opportunity for people to explore what leadership is and what their values and their drivers are. And it seems to be that space that makes all the difference to people. Our courses provide people with the space to listen and to learn from others. It provides the space and the opportunity to make connections with others across the sector. It provides that valuable space for people to make mistakes in a safe environment. It provides space to embrace difference and to work inclusively, the space to be curious and the space to be confident. And yes, of course, we provide the space for those hard skills-based sessions, financial management, leading change, presentation skills, strategic planning. These are the sessions that are easy to describe and explain, and for many leaders are the things that are easier to execute in comparison to the so-called softer skills that they're also expected to have. On our programmes, we talk a lot about values, and we believe that values are at the heart of effective leadership. They're not just words on your website or a page in your annual report. Values are evident in the actions, behaviours and decisions of leaders. Values are evident in the things that you do and how you relate to other people and the choices that you make. When you are aware of and can name the things that are important to you, you're more likely to cultivate habits that are congruent with who you want to be in the world. Your values start to translate into concrete, everyday behaviours. And by understanding our values, we can become more resilient and more able to influence within an organisation or externally to the people who don't necessarily share those values. So at CLAW, we start a process of values affirmation even before you've arrived on one of our programmes. We don't ask our participants for their biography to share with their fellow participants. We invite them instead to tell us about what matters to them and why. It's a challenging but powerful question. I'm going to digress a little and give you a personal example of how values have shaped my career. Many years ago, I made a decision that was absolutely driven by values and about what mattered to me. It was in the early 90s, and I was in the marketing department at Ticketmaster. I was the marketing officer. It was a good job. It was probably my first proper grown-up job. I had a computer. And I worked with some fantastic colleagues. I got to see lots of great theatre. And I did a good job. I did it well. At the same time, a few months in, I was offered an unpaid job as an administrator for a contemporary dance company whose work I absolutely loved. They were a talented group. The drive and the passion of the choreographer was quite infectious. And I was excited to get this opportunity to work with them. I was excited about helping them deliver their vision and make their work, you know, more impactful and share it with other people. This was an opportunity for me to make a difference, This wasn't just about doing the job well. So, much to my parents' dismay, I resigned without hesitation. Somehow I made it work financially for me, and the couple of years I worked for that company remained hugely important and impactful for me. I learned a lot of skills, fundraising, tour booking, learning how to work a lighting desk. But the biggest learning for me was that I started to better understand my values and the importance for me to be working on a project where I felt I was making a difference. Unlike my role at Ticketmaster, this was something where my heart was singing. I loved it. I was passionate about it. And the value of making a difference is with me to this day and plays a great part in my current work. I believe passionately that the work we do at the CLORA Leadership Programme can make a difference to people, and I guess that's why I'm still here 12 years on. My heart still sings. And on days when it's tough, I check in with my values and I ask myself, what drives you? What matters to you? Why do you do what you do? What are the big yes moments in your work that keep you going and keep you excited and motivated? Does your heart still sing? So in addition to values, we also explore authenticity, and we ask our participants to strive to be their true, authentic self. Tell your story. Be comfortable with that. It's okay to be you as a leader. Know yourself. Being an authentic leader isn't all about the individual, however. It's also about the people around you and how you understand them. Listen to your colleagues. Consider others. Learn to give and to receive feedback. Heighten your emotional intelligence. Understand and accept the difference in others and learn to work with that difference and not battle against it. From the outset, we ask our cultural leaders to take risks. And on all of our programmes, you'll be encouraged to take risks, to stretch, take time to reflect, strive for excellence. We've talked a lot about that this morning. Ask questions, actively listen, be curious, ask even more questions. Think big, practice failure, be creative and be bold. We encourage our participants to learn from each other and to be active and invaluable resource during the course and beyond. I firmly believe that you will learn just as much from the people within your cohort as the people from the front of the room delivering a session. The power of networks is immense, and I believe we've talked about that a lot in the last 2 days as well. So, in summary, our approach to leadership development is really to weave those essential hard skills with the even harder soft skills. It's a heady fusion of values-based leadership with learning and skills. Leadership, being a leader, and indeed developing and delivering leadership programmes will always be work in progress. No one has all the answers. You never stop learning, and it takes a lot of practice. People emerge from our programmes a little bit more resilient, better able to advocate, more confident, more strategic, and more connected. And I would argue that these are all things that are of absolute vital importance to the library sector. So that's my first 2 points covered, and it just leaves me to talk about where this fits with future workforce. At CLORA, we were approached some months ago by CILIP to deliver the pilot leadership course for public library leaders, but due to time constraints, we weren't able to take on the work ourselves and develop the programme, so we advertised it amongst the CLORA alumni. And I'm delighted that Joe Wally, who attended one of our leadership intensives a few years ago, was appointed to design and to lead the programme. We've talked about the course already this morning, and it was indeed shorter than any of CLORA's existing offers, with just a 2-day residential programme and a 1-day follow-up. But the approach and the aims of that course were very much in line with ours. It was a course that focused on building confidence, developing networks, thinking creatively, utilising strengths, exploring motivators and drivers, advocacy and resilience. As with the programme that we offer, in just 2 days the participants experienced the benefits of time for reflection and the opportunity to build confidence. They explored different ways of working, and at a time when the libraries are under continued pressure with yet more battles to contend with, they emerged with, I think, renewed hope, energy and inspiration. For everyone attending our programmes, it is a time to consider and reconnect with their values and reignite the passion for their work and the sector that is the most valuable outcome. I would argue that in challenging times, financial cuts, constant changes to develop a library's workforce, it is about resilient, passionate, expert and advocates that we're looking for, and this has to be a positive thing. So I'm delighted that we have one of the participants of that course that Jo Wally created here today. Rebecca is going to share a bit of her experience, how the courses might benefit libraries going forward. So thank you all so much for listening today, and I'm going to hand you over now to Rebecca. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Jo Wally, who designed the course, unfortunately couldn't come today, so I've got some of her notes included as part of this as well. So it was called the SILIP and SCL Public Library Services Leadership Course. It's quite a hard thing to say. And it was also funded by Arts Council England. And heads of services were encouraged to put forward applications for participants to attend. And in the end, 15 of us were selected to go on this. It was a really incredible opportunity to go, and some of my colleagues are here today, so if I miss anything out, please do jump in. So it was, as everyone said, it was a two-day residential course in Oxford with a one-day follow-up in Manchester in May. The course started out by teaching us leadership styles, authentic leadership, communication skills and advocacy, and resilience. Now the real special thing about this course was that it was designed in a really calming atmosphere. Everyone was very supportive of each other, and any feedback given was strength-focused. So you would look for the positives in things that your colleagues and partners were doing, or you know, doing personally or doing at work. Encourage each other and have detailed discussions on that. Then you were encouraged reflectively to look at your own strengths, see what you could improve on. We didn't really see them as flaws, we just thought they were areas for improvement, which I thought was a really nice way of putting it. But a lot was it was kind of about mindfulness and positive thinking, and because there's a new movement of mindfulness now that people are getting more involved with, it was very interesting to see leadership done in that kind of way. I think everyone's used to the sort of Myers-Briggs example before of, what kind of leader are you? And actually there's so many different leadership styles for different occasions, and you might be all of them on any different day. I think one of the big things that we all felt, because we were sort of either new leaders or hadn't really embraced our own leadership, was the authenticity side of things. So, one of the things that I shared with the group was that I can be quite childish. I'm, in charge of children's libraries, my job is really fun. It's really hard sometimes to come in and think, right, today I'm a grown-up, I'm doing a disciplinary, this isn't, time for, jazz hands or glitter. And it's, obviously, you do still have to be sensible in those occasions, but you don't have to pretend to be somebody else. And I think that was one of the biggest lessons that we all took away from the course. And something that you can't really be taught in a standard course. So actually being given that residential time, being given that time for reflection, the walking and talking, the talking to other people and seeing what kind of leaders they are is really inspiring. It was a really lovely group, as they said, from across the UK. So like talking to each other, learning from each other was amazing, and having that network of completely different people to bounce ideas off was really inspiring as well. We were encouraged to do a 360 feedback exercise. I don't know if many of you have had to do that before. So it filled us all with dread. But actually, again, it was a different kind of tool. It was called At My Best, and that is also strength-focused. So colleagues, friends and family had to feedback on things that they thought of about you. And it's something that, kind of feeds the ego, but actually is just a really nice thing as well. The impact of the course was measured at the end. Some of the things that Jo has fed back, she said that everybody had increased confidence, increased motivation, increased productivity, increased empathy, increased communication, and a belief in their own leadership. And from having spoken to all the people that attended, I have to agree with that. We left so happy and excited to go back to work and encourage our teams. It was very exciting. She also said there was decreased imposter syndrome. Now, none of us had heard of this. And we were like, what is that? And it was that doubting of what kind of leader you are. It was doubting that authenticity. So afterwards, we were like, God, you know, we didn't know we had a syndrome. Like now, you know, there's a label for it. But we're free and we're cured, so it was great. My personal experience of the course, as I sort of said to you, is that I felt really inspired and really happy to be leading as myself when I left. I did get back to work and I looked with my team at some of the things that they might want to do and what kind of leaders they might be, because I think one of the main lessons from the course was that you can be a leader at any level. You know, my ideas aren't more important than someone else's just because of the job role I'm in. So we did more of a brainstorming exercise in a lot of the sort of children's planning meetings and things that I ran, and people found that a lot more valuable. So it has actually changed my approach to how I work now, to how I think I engage with people. I think we've created a really positive environment in our children's team. Everyone's willing to give things a go. So we have now got things that some of the other libraries were doing before, but like slime making classes, which was something that was terrifying to some of, you know, the librarians who, you know, never even thought of this kind of thing. You know, some of our older librarians who don't think that kind of stuff should happen in the library anyway. And we did our own slime making workshop. I'm not sure our head of service was delighted that that's how we spent our time that morning, but actually the payback from that was brilliant. So the confidence, the networking, the inspiration has been fantastic. The feedback from my own team about how inspired they feel now, about coming forward with ideas, is brilliant. So the course has not just affected me, but my entire team. And so I kind of think if the opportunity can be shared with other people, you're hitting more than the people that are just attending the course. So it's really well worth it. And that's it for me.